The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, man, Eddie Gonzalez with us. We was talking about birthdays and getting older during the commercial break, man. Eddie approaching 40, getting in the best shape of his life.
Oh, man, I didn't know he was going to say that out loud on the show.
Yeah, man, hey, be proud of that. Be proud of that. Hey, one, be proud of that for two reasons. One, we made it. And right. And two, hey, man, every time I open Instagram, there's Slim Eddie getting.
I'm definitely going through some type of midlife crisis or something because I decided to get in shape for some reason. And then I start saying crazy stuff like, man, I'm going to run a 5K on.
There you go.
I'm going to run a marathon. So, yeah, maybe it's something, man. I'm blessed, though. I'm trying to enjoy it.
You're in the place to run a marathon. I've run two of those, man. And it is quite the experience there in New York.
Do you got the sticker on your car?
Nah,
are you that guy?
Nah, bro.
I would wag the flag. Like, if and whenever I do run a marathon, shout out my dog, Pilo. Y'all know Pilo, rapper.
Oh, yeah.
He just ran his first marathon. His manager, Khaled, he's run two now.
Word.
And I just love seeing that. I love seeing people get active and just try new stuff. You know what I mean? Because when me and Pilo was in Vegas a couple years ago, it was no talks of marathons happening. So I know some growth has occurred. So I'm happy for him.
I think I've done six. And my last one was my second New York. And I don't have, the sticker on the car, but I do have one of those shadow boxes with the bibs and all of the medals that I got to some of the different races I had.
I love that. See, I feel like mentally I could do it. Like, I'm not there physically yet. And just kind of like, the stamina of it. But I keep thinking about, like, the cathartic feeling of crossing that finish line.
Yeah.
Like, that must feel.
Yeah, so. the funny thing about the physical part is it's not just the actual running, like your legs. It's like once you get north of 20, and really I feel like it's once you get north of 18, but really once you get north of 20, you have to start thinking about how you're eating, like how you're fueling during the race. And that was the toughest part for me because the first one I ran on short notice, did it for charity. Didn't train, just thought, I'm an in shape dude. Like, I can do this. I could not. I did it. It would, the first 20 minutes, or excuse me, the first 20 miles was not like the last six. Drastically different. Drastically, drastically different. But that's what I learned over the next, however many races was finding what works for you in terms of I got to eat every 40 minutes or eat every 45 minutes, take one of those gels or cookies or whatever or something. And that's what made that last New York so special is like I had trained right, I ate right, and then I got that feeling because the first time I crossed that New York City, first time I was in Central Park, I wanted to die. If someone from the stands had shot me, I would have felt better about where I was than trying to get to that finish line. But the last one, I got to soak in being in Central Park and getting to those stands where people are there, and man, there ain't nothing like that.
Yeah, I know we're not, this isn't the men's health hour, but that's one of the things I've enjoyed most kind of in getting in shape. And this is the best shape I've been in really ever. Even when I was smaller, I wasn't in like great shape. I was just smaller, So, but you do learn a lot about yourself and your body and what you consume and how your body reacts and things like that. And I had stretches where I work out first thing in the morning. It was like, okay, I need a pre-workout snack. Like I need some energy stores. And then, it's, you just learn all these little things about yourself. So to hear you said about the marathon makes perfect sense. And you see people, some people do a little candy bar, some people do proteins. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's no joke, man. And I want to try it. I think I can do it. I want to try it. It's on my checklist. But look, before we move on, because he's not here, I want to shout out Kenny. I went to Instagram. He don't get the battle list about who's famous and who's not no more because he's throwing first pitches.
Yeah.
I've never in my life been asked to throw the first pitch at any type of event, let alone a Major League Baseball game.
Yep.
And I do want to salute because he threw from the mound. So he didn't cheat it. It was a little high. It did not look like a strike from the angle I seen, but old celebrity Kenny, salute to you for that, for throwing for the mound.
Yeah, you see Kenny down to the 4 day a week work schedule. He ain't here today. He out, enjoying being a celebrity.
Hey, man, when you get them appearance fees just for showing up, you know, you don't really got to come to the 9 to 5 as much anymore.
That's it. How hard did you laugh when Schefter's tweet popped up on your phone yesterday? Because I know you laughed.
Oh, as an old school Cowboy hater. Oh, man, I laughed. Oh, man, I was excited. And it drug out so long. And look, as a Raider fan, I'm very familiar with the silliness a football team can put you through. The Raiders kind of really only had the only comparable trade to this when they decided not to trade to pay Khalil Mack.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Gruden's first order of business was to trade him for what ended up becoming Jonathan Abrams and one of them becoming Josh Jacobs, who they decided not to pay. So it was all for naught. So, no, I laughed really hard, and it seems to be exactly as it looks, just a petty stare down, the unwillingness to pay one of the best players in football at the position that matters, pretty second most, you know. And, again, like, I get it. There's cap stuff. There's reasons, and you can try to sell this trade to me, but you don't let that walk out your building at 26 and you're only separated by X amount of dollars. This should have been done. You sign him. You give him his contract in March and you move on and you draft how you want. And the silliness of this all is you take it now after the draft, right before the season. So you get nothing that helps you for this season. You get the next two drafts, you don't know where they're going to be.
Yeah.
At least in March, you can say, okay, we traded him for the 9th pick this year and a player we can actually use. No, you punted one of the best defensive ends in football just to do it and to be petty. And then you send your owner out there, you know, not you send your owner. He walks himself out there. Obviously he runs things, doesn't know who he's talking about, stands on it all. And he's just like, you know, what is this all about? It just screams a measuring contest that this guy had to win. And it just makes you as a fan, cause I've been there with the Raiders, makes you go, well, if we're just in his hands, like, what is the point of what we're doing?
Did you watch the doc?
No, and I keep hearing it's great, and so I need to watch it soon.
It is. It's good. It's good. So full disclosure, I love that Cowboys team. Like that Michael Irvin, Emmitt Smith. Like, I loved that Cowboys team. I was a Cowboys fan up until 2016, and it's an enjoyable watch. I think it's an enjoyable watch as a football fan. It'll definitely be an enjoyable watch as a Cowboy fan. And I honestly think it's an enjoyable watch as a Cowboy hater too. What we keep hypothesizing is Jerry watched it. That's what we think is Jerry watched it. And he saw how defiant he was back in 1989 when he bought that team and fired Tom Landry and traded for Herschel Walker, who he brought up at his 46-minute press conference yesterday. He saw how he caved to Emmitt Smith and thought back to how he caved to Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott and said, I'm not doing this again. And that's what you talk about, the measuring contest. Like, all right, yeah, nah, I'm gonna win this one.
There's a part of me that tries to understand. It feels like if I was in those shoes, how would I handle this? If I owned this team for X amount of years and I've had this great measure of success now, as a hater, I laugh and say, yo, that was like 5 presidents ago. We don't even rank that no more. Like, we don't even care. But if you're Jerry, you go, yo, I know what I'm doing. I proved it. And we've been good to okay in between as well. Like, I get the ego of I still want to run it. I still want to be a part of this. Like, I don't have this car just to sit in the garage. I'm going to drive this car every Sunday. But I do think there comes a time, and there's also part of what you do as the owner, the boss, the whatever, is delegate some of these duties and putting your son in charge of it and really just leaving yourself in charge of it and not changing your ways in any way. It's only come to damage this team and this franchise. Again, you can rest on your laurels of we own the most expensive building in this country. Mm-hmm. We're the most valuable team and the most valuable league in the world, if you feel that way. And I don't care, but it's going to hurt their team in the meantime. And it has. And it's not like they draft out this world to fill the need to, you know, we can just rebuild every other year. We can just do it that way. You know, this is what they're banking on. They've continued to let their stars walk. You know, now you start looking at 88 on the field and wondering when he's going. You start looking at 4 and wondering when he's going, mm-hmm. and wondering what's next with this franchise. Just a hilarious saga if you don't love the Cowboys, and a frustrating one if you do.
What do you think this does for Green Bay, though?
Oh, that was already a good team. I mean, I think it all rests on Jordan Love, and is he in that tier of quarterback where he is now a megastar quarterback and can win you games? Or is he that tier that he seemed to be in last year, obviously dealing with some injuries, where not necessarily a game manager, but he wasn't going to push you across the finish line. He wasn't going to be what put you over the top. But, yeah, you add that to that defense. This is a team in a tough division that already looked good. You got the champions in that conference, obviously, as well. It's a competitive conference. But I like the Packers. I like what they do. They have a real home field advantage. And you get one of the premier players in the league to only bolster that. Now, I have read a bunch of stuff that's basically said, yo, their cap is screwed for the next couple of years. But the cap has always been a mirage.
Right.
You always can work your way around that. It almost doesn't matter. If they're going for broke, that's what you want to see from that team, if it's the team you're rooting for. I'm excited to see them. I like the Packers. I thought they had a chance to make a run last year. I actually really like Jordan Love. If he maintains some semblance of stability, I think they could be really, really good this year.
Yeah.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, I'm with you. Obviously, the Micah Parsons trade from the Cowboys to the Packers is the biggest story in sports, but there's a couple other things I want to talk to you about. This question is based on something I was reading this morning, and I don't know. There is no one in my phone who is more qualified to answer this question than you. Uh-oh. And I believe to this day, you have done the best interview I've ever heard with this individual. I need you to tell me who Kyrie Irving is.
Where does this come from? Like, what?
I was reading about his farming. I was reading about that whole thing that he's doing with the farm. And, you know, I spoke a lot about Kyrie. We spoke a lot about Kyrie this year and how there were moments watching him, you know, pre-Luka trade, post-Luka trade. He looked so happy. Like, he just looked happy and, like, you know, like mature, like things that you think about when you're like, he just looked unbothered by everything. And I saw that, and I saw that version of Kyrie, and I'm reading about him farming, and there's that unbelievable clip from the Kings game where he tears his ACL. He's got tears streaming down his face, and he says, "Thank you, God." He shoots that free throw and his season ends. And it's like, yo, who is this guy?
I got a message. I'm looking at my phone right now. I got a message at 2:00 today. And it's a picture of Kyrie. And it says, "I don't know who else to ask, but do you know why he's in Bed-Stuy right now?" Apparently Kyrie's in Brooklyn just being Kyrie. To answer the question, I think he's a man that's like extremely sure of himself and just comfortable in his identity, confident in who he is. And what that identity often is he's just a curious mind. Like, he's just a mind who wants to see the world and see as many experiences and learn as many things as he can. Now, does it mean he's always right? No. Does it mean he's, you know, he makes mistakes? Yeah. But he's a guy who is the world at the palm of his hands. He's earned it. He's worked really hard for it. He's mastered what has been his passion his whole life. And now he's just deciding all of the other things he wants to do with his life. He's building a family. He's just enjoying himself. And now he's got this weird gap year where he's not going to be doing the thing he loves so much. And it sounds like he's going to take his time to get right, too. He got paid, which obviously helps and is part of the reality of this as well. But my thing with Kyrie is I think he's one of the more misunderstood guys. You know, he got kind of vilified for some silly stuff, some worthy stuff. But in my experiences with him at all times, nothing but great, nothing but kind. You know, he came back for a game against Dallas, I believe, or Utah, but he got a big tip dunk. It's one of the best highlights of his Nets tenure. And I ran into him after the game, like in the tunnel. I wasn't trying to bother him, and I grabbed him. I said, "Yo, you dunk now? Like, what is he?" He's like, "Man," you know, he was excited, and I had my daughter with me. And he took like 2-3 minutes to just talk to my daughter, just like, "Yo, you damn, your daughter's hella old," and you know, talking to her and her boyfriend, just you know, being polite, just mm-hmm. being a cool person. And that's the guy he's always been. When I had him on that episode you're talking about, he came to me after a game. He's like, "Yo, I want to do a show with you." It's like, "What?" You know, he knew me. And he's like, "No, I want to do it. Like, just me and you. Like, you know, Kevin could be there, but he had to be. Like, just me and him." Like, "Yo, we can do it tomorrow. Like, what do you mean?" And so the story I was just telling him on stream the other day was, we actually had planned to do that show game one of the Boston series. I think that's 2023, maybe. I forget. I flubbed the time. No, it's 22. That's a series that got swept in. It was mm-hmm. like essentially the end of that tenure. So it was like, "Yo, I'm going to come to Boston. Let's shoot it at the game one." He's like, "Cool. We'll do it in the hotel. Bring camera crew, da 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 da." He was all into it. I was like, "Great." Now, if you remember that game, they lost on a buzzer beater. Kyrie had like 36 points, had a great first three quarters, a kind of iffy fourth quarter. And it ends on this wild scramble play. And Jason Tatum gets a pass. He spins, makes a layup at the buzzer. Crazy. I'm sitting there with Kyrie's friend. And like, we walk out the arena just like in shambles. I can't believe what just happened. Mind you, in the third quarter, we're yelling. She's like, "Yo, we're going to win the title. Yo, this podcast is going to be crazy." We go to a team dinner afterwards. We're all kind of soaking around. And Kai, like, you know, I wasn't going to bother him. "We're not going to shoot this show tonight. Like, we're not shooting after this." He comes with me, puts his hand on my shoulder, says, "Yo, we can't shoot that show tonight, but I got you. I promise." I was like, "All right." And he was just like, the fact that he was even felt the need to let me know, it was just like, you know, why is that you're concerned right now? But he's just always been a polite guy, super genuine. He's just super generous to everybody around. And it's not just me telling those stories too. Everybody around that I've seen interact with him the same way. So I'm happy to watch him kind of wander this world. My joke used to be, "Yo, Kai's going to disappear, grow a beard, and we'll never see him again."
For real.
But I think it's going to be the opposite. He's going to be around, but we don't know who he's going to pop up in. You know, he's farming now. Who knows what he's doing next? And, you know, I like to see him in his place. He seems to be really at peace.
It's going to be former basketball player Kyrie Irving built like the world's most sustainable energy farm house or something like.
Right.
Like what? He did what? Yeah, in shoes. All right, look, like, cool.
And look, when his son comes around, when his son starts hooping,
no,
please be on the lookout. His daughters too. They gonna be some problems, boy.
This conversation. Kyrie to me is, I don't know if he's the most underrated player the game has seen in recent memory, or the most underappreciated player the game has seen in recent memory. Because he's nasty.
So the modern fan, and I'm not like super anti-analytics, but I think at some point we kind of burn through. I'm anti-narrative. That's why I call my show No Narratives. So we turned it into, "Oh, he's never been a number one option. And oh, he has had these bad playoff series and all these things." And it's like, cool. If we're comparing trophy cases and resumes and all that, great. And we do that, and we should. But if we're comparing like what happens on the court and the guy, what he can do, the capabilities they have, he's up there. And, you know, I joked on that episode you're talking about, like, "Yo, do you have a weakness?" The weakness me and Kevin came up with was, you know, there's no way you can do a left-handed hook shot. Well, 2 years later, he hits one from 15 mm-hmm. feet for the game on Jokic. So it's like, yo, I remember hitting him like, all right. Like, because that's what his answer was, like, "No, I can make a left-handed hook shot. I practiced that." Like, "Man, shut up." And he makes one. So it's like, as far as the skills of the game, oh, man. Like, I've talked to guys around the league and, like, almost one-to-one to a man. It's like, "Oh, no, he's better than Steph." And people get mad when you say that. But, like, I think what they're saying is his ability is out of this world. My joke is he had to be 6'2", because it would be unfair if he was even 2 inches taller. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, God made him small to keep it fair. He's ridiculous. He's absurd. I do think he's one of those underrated guys now. I think we're starting to do that to Allen Iverson, who I've always loved, and we came up in that era of watching him just be incredible. And it's just like, we will appreciate Kyrie more down the line when we don't have him anymore to watch him do what he does.
you're out there. I wholeheartedly agree with that. You're out there in New York. Did you hear Dawn talking about Dawn Staley talking about the New York Knicks job?
Yeah, and I don't know how real that was. She did meet with them, which is what she confirmed and said she would have took the job. I thought it was fascinating. I think Dawn is one of the better basketball minds we have. I interviewed Dawn before, and we had like this moment beforehand. We're all in the green room, and it's like this Nike event. So it's like me, Dawn, and some other people, Paige Beckers, who was incredible, and Chet Holmgren came as well, and that's the homie. But Dawn, being the pro and the coach she is, she was early. I was early because I was there, but as far as like the guest, she was the last guest on the show. She was the first one to show up in the green room. So it's just me and Don in this green room for 20 minutes. Could not be more charming. Could not be nicer. You know, we were talking Eagles football because she was getting ready for that. She's a big Philly kid. And I had asked her, would she coach pros? And she really felt like, you know, mentoring kids, young women, that was her role. That was what she loved the most. So it was interesting to see her, you know, I don't think you can turn down the Knicks job. I don't think there's any world where you can do that. She can always go back to South Carolina. She can always go back to college and just continue to do what she's doing now. I'm curious if she does jump to the pros, if she wants to. She's obviously built a great program and continues to, and watches all her babies from South Carolina just run the league, run roughshod over the league right now. But I love Dawn Staley. You can't tell me a bad thing about her. And I think, you know, one of the more respected names and faces in basketball, men and women as well, would have been very interesting to see her get a shot in the NBA.
I think it's always dicey when you, when you're a college coach and you talk about interviewing for other jobs. And she went as far as to say, I would have taken that job. That puts her university in a tough position. It puts her kids in a tough position. Because if they fall short, she's going to catch smoke for it. Or if, like, we were talking about this a few minutes ago, like, if the team falls short in any sort of way for whatever reason, there could be 50 reasons why it happens. Or is Dawn's days, are her eyes on the NBA? Like, is she focused on South Carolina? This is the second NBA job she's interviewed for. Maybe she's built the dynasty and she's ready to go. Because Dawn has absolutely done to South Carolina what Pat did to Tennessee and what Geno did to UConn. Like, she has made them one of those names. And that is very, very rarefied air. But that rarefied air comes with the responsibility that the other coaches in college basketball don't have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, we've seen it a little bit with Geno. There's been talks of trying to get him to the pros. And, you know, we seen it at UConn men's with Hurley. Mm-hmm. And people wondering, oh, if he didn't take the Lakers job, oh, was he focused? And, you know, he's a bit of a madman. So I think we see him focused. But, you know, I think Dawn has so much respect amongst that program and amongst what she's built. And again, like, she has such a thumbprint on the current product in the W. You know, yeah. Asia Wilson is her baby. Aaliyah Boston is her baby. And, like, she pushed them into the league in a way that, and there's more, like, don't let me shortchange them. But, you know, these are the players she's pushed out there. I think people will kind of salute and understand what decisions she had to make. And at the end of the day, you know, didn't have to be made, and she can focus on what she's doing. Plus, she keeps winning. She keeps winning. And as long as she keeps winning, we're not going to hear those problems. She's going to be in the Final Four, you know, soon. And, you know, if they don't get the Natty, they're going to turn right back around and have another great recruitment class. Everybody trusts their daughters and their players with Dawn Staley. So I think it's true. Like, there will be some of that, but I think for the most part, the respect level that she garners will push through all of that.
My man, I appreciate you so much. Have a great Labor Day weekend. Get out there and enjoy that 60, 65 degrees, whatever you got out there in New York City. Get out there and enjoy that.
I'm looking for whoever grilling out here, man. Before we go, are you a hot dog guy, hamburger guy? What are you eating at the barbecue?
Oh, sweetie, no. I'm gonna put some ribs for about eight hours. Yeah, I'm gonna put some ribs out there, and then we got a couple of fillets that'll go. And like, even if it's just for me and the, like, it's a small group. Like, yeah, I'm gonna look for the excuse to cook.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm one of them new age men. I don't do too much grilling. I love a hot dog, a glizzy, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I like some barbecue chicken.
See, I like to smoke more than grill. Like, let me put that joint on there for 6-7 hours. Yeah. Let let my app tell me when to go get it, and then just work on the few tricks that I've learned with the sauce and all that stuff. I'll do that.
You next level. I'm showing up at the homies' situation and picking at their food. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
I'm that guy. Sorry, guys.
That's a good look.
My guy, good to see you.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.